and welcome to a special episode of the Brick House Podcast. I'm your host, Bob Johnson.
And I'm Matt Baker.
We're live from the Western Conference Finals.
Oh, wow. It feels great to be here, Bob.
Well, it's the Brick House Studios. We're about to watch the Western Conference Finals. We're sort of like EJ, Kenny, and Barkley all the way down in Atlanta. Their table on TV looks too cramped to sit at. It's not...
No, we got a nice...
Not really Brick House
We got
style.
A nice wide table with lots of space here.
We need a lot of space. So we decided to take a different format with the Brick House episode. At Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals is
pretty
really...
Pretty big game, Bob.
It's inspired us.
Oh, yeah.
It's inspired us to want to try something else. We're kind of kicking ourselves thinking, what kind of format should we do? Should we like report the game live, like C-Web and Marv Albert?
Part of me thought that we should do a 2.5 hour
live
Brick
House.
Yeah, just us rambling. Because the other night, we were watching Game 6 together with some people and all the number one fans of the show.
Yeah, the live audience. Yeah.
And one of the lovely ladies that was here who didn't really know much about basketball or the podcast, when the game was over, said, "So, did I just basically witness the podcast in action?"
Right.
Because she, all the talking we were doing, she thought it was the podcast, and I guess it simulated it sort of well, so.
Basically, our quips and insults at other players and referees, coaching decisions.
Yeah.
Minutes before the show, I thought, sometimes the best idea is not to reinvent the wheel or overthink it.
Right.
So we're going to attempt to do a pre-game show, which you're listening to now, a halftime show, which will come between the first and second. No, we'll do it between the second and third quarters.
Yeah.
And then, of
course,
halftime. Right.
Yeah.
Halfway through the game. We'll do a post-game show when the game is over, unless we get really motivated by some sort of crazy Malice in the Palace type Draymond Stephen Adams fight that just inspires us to go live.
Sure.
Pretty much every week something happens immediately after we record a Brick House episode. And
what happened this time?
This time was Draymond Green's testicle gate, as I'm calling it. With Stephen Adams.
That happened. Oh, that's true. That did happen.
Seems like eons ago.
It really does.
And it was also followed a couple days later by Facegate of Draymond Green doubling down and kicking Russell Westbrook in the chin.
So, you know, it's crazy because the last time we did a podcast, your front gate was broken. So it just led to a series of gate-related issues.
I've actually fixed it twice since then.
Okay.
No, not really. But.
Sure.
Feels like it.
Yeah.
The NBA allowed Draymond Green to stay in Game 4, and we hadn't talked about that since.
Furious, Bob.
I don't want to give a hot take about it since it's such a cold topic, but it was clearly evidence of the NBA making decisions based on the NBA's best interest. And
right.
The NBA's best interest this season is the Warriors.
Keeping the Warriors together.
The Warriors are the star of their movie this year, and they don't want to lose them, or they at least want to give them every chance they can.
I said I was furious. I wasn't necessarily furious. I'm fine with Draymond not getting suspended because I want to watch all the players out there.
Right.
I'm upset because it just makes me think about Suns and Spurs 2007 over and over again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Take one step off the court after Steve Nash gets body checked by Robert Horry. So, Matt, I told you I wanted to do a quick personal anecdote with Matt Baker. We're throwing off the formatting, just
it's game seven day. It's
flipping
fine.
It on its head.
Yeah.
And now it's time for a personal anecdote with Matt Baker.
Matt, have you ever kicked someone in the groin on accident before? you played a lot of different sports.
Yeah, I spent a good deal of my life kicking.
Okay.
I don't recall ever doing that. I don't.
On purpose, perhaps?
Neither. I certainly not on purpose. That's a very deliberate, harsh thing.
People kick people in the balls on purpose all the time, but I was curious to hear. I pretty much knew the answer to your question, though. It was kind of a trick question because I don't think anyone's accidentally ever kicked someone in the balls before.
Right.
And the fact that they think Draymond on live TV, after reviewing it from every angle, is the first time is pretty hilarious to me. I saw on Cleveland.com that the Cleveland players were shown by the reporter the video of Draymond kicking Russell Westbrook in the face, which happened in the fourth quarter of Game 5. The same thing, got what he perceived as a foul, but a steal by Westbrook, and retaliated by kicking his leg pretty much over his head.
Yeah.
He hit Westbrook in the chin, who didn't react. And Van Gundy went on the rant saying if he would have fallen down, Draymond, you know, might have been up for a suspension again.
Right.
The next day after Facegate, the Warriors took the opportunity to give Draymond Green the Alvin Attles Community Impact Award.
Oh, wow.
Which came complete with an article listing his community service in the Bay Area just this season. Just in case Facegate got out of hand and the NBA thought about actually suspending him. Anderson Varejão is one win away from a guaranteed championship ring this season.
So he gets one because he played half the season with Cleveland.
If you spend any time with the team that season, you get a championship ring. So if the Warriors win tonight, he definitely gets one no matter who wins the finals.
So do we know if this has happened in basketball before? Because
maybe when there was four teams in the league.
Right, because this actually is, it doesn't happen a ton in baseball, but it has happened in baseball. I've been thinking about Varejão this whole series, as you do. Just how weird it is.
They have not released Varejão's secret weapon yet.
You spend all this time with LeBron in Cleveland, and then you might get traded away before LeBron and Cleveland win it. It's got to be kind of a kick in the balls, to borrow the Draymond parlance.
Yeah.
But I guess you're right. If he wins tonight, he'll get that ring.
I'd always take a figurative kick in the balls over a literal one, though.
Yeah. This is the moment. This is why they traded. This is why they signed him, though. If they win tonight, that's when the secret weapon, the ball of how to stop the Cavs, gets unleashed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think all the dirtiest things that Draymond Green can say about LeBron James and
it's happening.
And his skeletons in his closet. Matt, I know we have Game 7 coming up, and then probably an amazing historical NBA Finals.
Right.
At least that's what we're all hoping for. But we're going to have an entire summer of Brick House podcasts.
Oh, man.
And I just started preemptively thinking about some different things we can do. And, you know, we're all about comedy, but the summer, you got to mix it up with a few thrillers as well.
Ooh.
And I saw a
big budget thriller for the summer.
I saw a few headlines and then a Reddit discussion that sparked some summer podcast previews I want to give our listeners.
We got to keep them going.
Well, Pau Gasol says he may miss the Olympic Games due to concern for the Zika virus. In fact, I don't know if you've heard this, but 152 health experts have signed a letter calling for the World Health Organization and the IOC to halt the event or move it elsewhere.
I've been following this a little bit.
Yeah, Pau Gasol and other athletes are thinking about maybe not attending.
Well, the river down there in Rio de Janeiro, I think, is green. I think it's, and it's not a St. Patrick's Day ploy. I think it's just kind of green, filthy water all the time. So the rowers, I know that rowing and some of those water sports were kind of worried especially.
Yeah, so we can always see a Brazilian horror movie, one that actually starring mosquitoes as the villain. I suppose with some CGI, we can make that work.
Is this speaking of Anderson Varejão, is this a ploy to get Varejão a gold medal for Brazil in basketball in the Olympics? Is that
some chemical mosquito warfare?
Yeah, just to bring home the gold for Brazil in basketball.
Got to get that hometown win. Another thriller idea came from an NBA Reddit stream of what is your worst NBA nightmare? and it brought up something to my attention that I was not aware of. Matt, there is something in the NBA called the disaster draft clause. This was probably inspired by the 1960 Los Angeles Lakers airplane that almost went down, or maybe they were the Minneapolis Lakers at the time.
Yeah.
The airplane almost went down and lost the entire team, so the NBA wrote a clause, what would happen if five or more players on a team were to die?
Yes.
The NBA would enact a disaster draft to replace the individuals lost, and so all teams unaffected by the disaster would then each be allowed to protect five players. So this could be another NBA Brick House episode where we have volcanoes erupting.
Yeah, no, this is great,
LA,
inspiring stuff.
You know, tsunamis on the East Coast.
Yeah.
Players are dying. You know, there's a Walking Dead sort of new world order
that's
taking
right
over. But of course, you still can protect, you know, your five living players.
Yeah. If the zombie outbreak happens, first thing I'm worried about is who the Suns protect. That's going to be on my mind.
It'd just be pretty funny too if we're literally, you know, Dawn of the Dead on top of the building with the Phoenix Suns, and they're just like,
make sure Booker's on that list.
Yeah, sorry, T.J. Warren.
Yeah.
You got to go, man. Good luck though with all the zombies.
Tyson
out there.
Chandler, you're a very nice guy. But if we make it out of here, that $13 million contract is killing us.
Speaking of NBA nightmares, Matt, the Houston Rockets have hired a new head coach.
Oh, man, you love this, don't you?
This is my personal hell.
Yeah.
It is definitely time to panic!
The rumors of D'Antoni going to Houston I never thought could be true. I thought it was a joke. The last time he coached, he was 27-55 for the L.A. Lakers.
Yeah.
Guy who couldn't play Pau Gasol, couldn't figure out how to use him, went on to start in the All-Star game the year after leaving the Mike D'Antoni coach team.
Right.
Couldn't be any stronger evidence that the Rockets have no intention of working with Dwight Howard ever again. If they do, then maybe this is some sort of strategy to ensure that he does not opt in to his last year of his deal.
Well, Dwight already went through the D'Antoni ringer in Los Angeles.
Exactly why I'm suggesting that it might be a ploy to make ensure that he stays away.
Yeah.
But I can't understand what is going on. You know, one of the first things that they announced was they're now going to be looking for a defensive specialist to be the associate head coach, which makes me think if you're going to interview a half a dozen, 10 or so people, why give millions and millions of dollars to someone who is only half of a head coach?
Right.
And then immediately turn your search to defense.
Yeah. Wait, so how much should they give D'Antoni, you say?
I don't know if it's actually been published. Articles are too hurtful for me to open if you want to hear the truth of it.
Okay, so Thibodeau got $10 million a year, right? And he's known basically as a defensive coach. But he's not inept on offense.
You think it's possible they hired D'Antoni because they got some sort of Craigslist deal?
You know, maybe.
Kind of like a used ironing board of NBA coaches at this point.
But there's a good chance that they'll pay D'Antoni and the defensive specialist combined more than $10 million, you would think. Reason D'Antoni's system worked in Phoenix is it was perfect. Perfect for him. You had Nash, the ultimate floor general for that system. You had young Amari, who was just flying everywhere. Marion, super athletic and could guard. Raja Bell could guard and hit the corner three.
Well, would you say that the evidence of Mike D'Antoni's coaching then is that he needs a player who was just historically one of the best players to ever make the best basketball decision in 7 seconds or less?
Yeah.
And without Steve Nash running his team, he doesn't look like that smart of a coach. And even with Steve Nash running his team, you could say, and a lot of people do say, that that team never lived up to expectations. When I saw that the Rockets actually did go through with this hiring of D'Antoni, I thought to myself, maybe Daryl Morey is just going full crazy. You know, he's doubling down on his threes and layups and no defensive strategy, just going for it.
Yeah.
He's bucking the trends. He's not going back to convention. Maybe he's secretly hired Sam Hinkie back.
Ooh. He spent that those few months learning all he can in that wonderful 76ers organization, so you know.
I guess Harden probably knows him from USA Basketball as well.
Yeah.
And I, from all accounts, he seems like a nice guy.
Sure, and I would imagine that Harden probably got excited because he knows D'Antoni is just going to let him do whatever he wants.
Well, the game is about to start. We're watching the players warm up. At halftime, we're going to have our takes on the All-NBA teams.
Ooh.
The voters.
Might have a special guest for that one, too, I think.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We're going to have a diss of the week from a 12-year-old boy. And a lot more exciting things. We're going to talk a lot of shit about James Harden. So, spoilers.
It will seem like a while for us, but it'll only be a few seconds for you, the listener.
Play that Brick House tune. We're back at the half with the halftime show. First ever Brick House halftime show, joined by our guest, Kevin Hirschner.
Thank you for having me, Bob.
He's here. We're having burgers, watching the game, waiting for the Warriors to make it interesting, to kind of getting it close here towards the half. What are your guys' takes? It's 48-42.
Yeah, they Clay
is closer than it seemed.
Tale of two quarters for Clay Thompson. He was 0-for-7 in the first quarter, and now he actually has like 11 points.
Got 13
like that.
Points wow. To lead all scorers for the Warriors.
Wow.
I want to take this time to review the belated All-NBA teams that came out this past week. It made me have a few questions for our guest. You know, everyone just wants to talk about who's the biggest snubs, why some people should or should not have been put on the teams. I figure, since everyone's going to be talking about that, why not talk about what these votes actually mean for NBA voters. There's a few people that have sparked some interest as to how they got voted there and what this means for the direction of the NBA. For example, DeAndre Jordan being voted to the first team All-NBA was a big surprise. First of all, he's now been voted first team All-Defensive Team and first team All-NBA before ever being voted to any All-Star team. He's also All-NBA before his superstar co-star in the alley-oop dunking Blake Griffin ever became a first-teamer. What I think this says is that what managers want out of a center in this day and age is someone who's going to protect the rim, throw down alley-oop dunks, and grab rebounds.
Mm-hmm.
They're willing to pay max money for a player like this, and that's a prototypical thing. And if you can't give the guy all-star awards or some sort of superstar commercial or sports apparel endorsement, at least you can give them these awards to show other players, this is what we want you to do. Paul George tweeted simply third crying laughing emoji.
Yeah, that might be fair, though.
Do you think there's an asterisk? I know a lot of people were vouching for Draymond to be considered as a center, which a lot of people think he would have beat out DeAndre for first team all NBA. Do you put an asterisk, or do you think it's fair to put DeAndre at center and Draymond at power forward?
What about Cousins at center?
Well, that's what I'm trying to point out, is that some of the players seem like statistically obviously superior.
Sure.
Yet there's a reason. What is the reason that a player like DeAndre would get voted over someone who's clearly statistically better? Obviously, Cousins has his off-the-court issues, and his statistics while impressive, do not equate to wins necessarily for his team. Zach Lowe suggested that Draymond Green should be voted for the first team, and I agree with you. That death lineup is more effective against some of the best centers in the league. I mean, DeAndre put up a good fight against Draymond, but he still won every single game against the Clippers, and usually that matchup as well. You know, it really probably should just be the five best players in the NBA, especially because the league is becoming more and more positionless. You know, why put DeAndre ahead of not only Draymond Green, but Kevin Durant? Some of the other players that I thought were a big difference to be left off the All-NBA teams was James Harden. He's the first player ever with splits of 27 points, 8 assists, 5 rebounds to not make the All-NBA first team, let alone not make any All-NBA team. And the snub, I think, again, sort of points to what people are taking into account. And it's not just his stats, but his off-the-court controversies. It reminded me of when the health department told Kind Bars that they couldn't put healthy on their labels. Have you guys heard about this?
No.
Well, the health department said that Kind Bars bars were too high in fat.
Kind Bars?
Kind, yeah. K-I-N-D.
Yeah.
They were too high in fat for them to claim that they were healthy. However, the health department's, you know, rules for what indicate health don't make up the difference for good fats versus, you know, saturated
trans fats. Trans fats, saturated fats, sure.
So all the fats are coming from nuts and seeds in Kind Bars, which are actually good for you. So Harden's stats are really, you know, these empty stats, according to some. Leaving him off the All-NBA team sort of says is that, you know, the food pyramid or how we judge players is an antiquated one and one that we want to change. And, you know, fuck that guy who's dating Khloe Kardashian.
I was waiting for you to go with a Kardashian weight loss or weight gain joke with this whole Kind Bar thing.
Yeah, I think, you know, even more than the Kind Bars, you know, the non-controversy is that the GMs are penalizing him for not attempting to be in shape or play defense while getting paid, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. Did you guys hear the latest controversy that he was out with porn star Mila Jade and she was on her Snapchat taking pictures with the writing saying, like, LOL, out with James Harden, no pictures allowed, LMAO. I did a little investigation just for Brickhouse purposes into Miss Jade's Twitter account and discovered that perhaps James Harden was not wanting to be seen photographed with this woman, you know, not only because of her industry or, you know, occupation, but because she has a Nike Just Do It tattoo on her behind.
Huh.
And maybe being photographed with her would be some violation of his $200 million Adidas deal.
That might be it.
The other day, Stephen A. Smith called LeBron James a lunch pail player. You guys know the expression. So I figure if LeBron James is a lunch pail player, then James Harden is like a indulgent champagne brunch that lasts 3 hours. Has none of his teammates, but maybe a few porn stars invited. These All-NBA votes cost Anthony Davis $24 million frickin' dollars, by the way.
Yeah. But?
But Damian Lillard, according to the same Rose Rule bonus, got an extra $20 million added onto his max contract.
Why did everybody knew that Anthony Davis had the potential to cash in on that Rose Rule? How come people weren't talking about Lillard all season?
It's a good point. I'm not sure. Maybe because people expected James Harden to be voted to the All-NBA team.
Maybe
I think just, a lot of people wrote that Blazers team off once Aldridge left also.
Right, and I guess because was Anthony Davis's contract more fresh in our minds?
I think with Anthony Davis that it's really another funny example of how these teams were selected. I think it has a lot to do with his expectations going into this season. You know, his stats are actually not that different at all from last year when he was being preordained as the future best player in the NBA. His rebounds and his PER are down a little bit this season. But I think because the team didn't make it further in the playoffs, because they didn't exceed expectations with him being in the top three in MVP voting, that they penalized him.
I did see some stat this year that Harden, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, but Harden, his like total points, rebounds, steals, and assists were higher than Curry's this year. He played, I think, three or four more games than Curry did. Curry missed a few, but he did have more total in a lot of those main categories. But he also did set the league record for most turnovers in a season, so that doesn't help.
We're going to take a segment shift over to our diss of the week to bring you our promised diss from a 12-year-old.
Yo mama is so fat!
Whose 12-year-old is this?
My friend.
Have a child here?
Yeah.
You don't know about?
My friends who live in Chicago have some kids, and they're... texting with the 12-year-old, get his thoughts on the Warriors-Thunder game. His name's Jack, and I said, Jack, I need your thoughts on what just happened. This was after Game 6. And Jack came back with a, Choklahoma City Thunder couldn't get it done. 12-year-old diss of the week. Choklahoma City, Bob.
I love it. My brother-in-law, Steven, was listening to the Warriors game on the radio. I think he was at work. He said the announcer described one of Andrew Bogut's passes as, that pass was higher than the kids at Coachella.
That's good.
I told him it was very brickhouseable. He said, I thought so.
Was this a local broadcast?
I think it must have been. He lives in San Francisco.
Can I cut back in on Curry and Harden real quick?
Please.
So Harden played 425 more minutes this year than Curry, okay?
Okay.
And only shot 19 more field goals than Curry.
Wow.
He shot 230 less three-pointers than Curry, and he also had 112 more turnovers.
Well, that tells us we're about to get back to the end of the game here. So we'll get back to you guys at the NBA Finals preview and the recap of Game 7 right after we go and watch it. That's it. It's a lock. We're in the first ever Brick House post-game show, fresh off Game 7 series. I'm Bob Johnson.
Hey, I'm still Matt Baker.
Back here again with Kevin Hirschner to break down the Game 7 we just watched. Tesla is also introducing herself. She's an Australian cattle dog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that was me barking.
My fucking ass.
That was not the dog barking. That was my introduction.
What, the Warriors outscored the Thunder by 17 in the third quarter?
Steph Curry went off again, 7 3-pointers. Very similar to the last game. They just were dominated at the three-point line. Barkley was commenting on Bill Walton smiling in the stand, saying he's smiling now, but he won't be smiling next year.
The Thunder got outscored by 30 on three-pointers tonight.
Goodness. I did see that Dion Waiters had a decent series, better than expected, at least in the Thunder wins this season.
Do you think he shot himself into like a $15 million a year contract or something?
I feel like everyone just like tripped over their own shoelaces into a $15 million a year contract this year. So now, of course, the Warriors are going to be facing the Cleveland Cavaliers in a rematch of last year's finals series. What are your guys' expectations for this?
Seven games?
Let's hope so. That's the best we could hope for. The Warriors are just now celebrating, and we will get all the details about that later. But since the Cavs won against the Raptors and closed out their series early, we get to know now that the locker room didn't have any champagne in it. The Cavaliers, they celebrated with water, and in the case of Kevin Love, chocolate milk. I think Kevin Love is really embracing this State Farm commercial, Lil' Kev caricature.
Doesn't he Hawk chocolate milk on TV, though? Isn't he part of that whole campaign? Like, not any specific brand. You know how they have those chocolate milk commercials where it's just chocolate milk?
Brought to you by just the Dairy Mafia.
The idea?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's built with chocolate milk. That's the ad campaign.
I'd take a theoretical spokesman job for chocolate milk.
Yeah. Oh, we celebrate the entire collection of chocolate milk.
So now that OKC has lost, it's the second season in a row where a team has beaten the San Antonio Spurs in a tough series and then went ahead and choked away a 3-1 series lead directly after that.
You know who one of those teams that choked away a 3-1 series lead was, Bob?
Oh, the one that haunts my nightmares daily? Thanks for bringing that up again, Matt.
Well, I was talking about the one that haunts my nightmares. The Suns.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Suns are also on that dubious list.
In 94-95, when they were up 3-1 on the Rockets, and they had that.
And they had home court advantage.
And they had home court, yeah, and then they lost in 7 games. And that Suns team was arguably better than the one that actually went to the finals, because it was that team plus Danny Manning and Wayman Tisdale and...
Cleveland Cavaliers coach Ty Lue was asked which team he wants to face in the finals.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, we want to face the winner. That was a hot take from Ty Lue. One of the controversial things that came out just before the games was that the NBA normally sticks to its usual schedule of referees.
Mm-hmm.
And they have, you know, a predictive matter that they determine who's going to be the crew for the game. However, for Game 7, just tonight, they changed the crew to exclude Scott Foster, and they replaced him with Danny Crawford. A lot of fans might not know the difference, but the LA Times just this past year did a recent survey of NBA players asking everyone to vote for their 3 favorite refs and their 3 least favorite refs, and it just so happens that Scott Foster was voted as the least favorite ref, while he was replaced by Danny Crawford, who was most favorite ref.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, but that Scott Foster is the guy who threw Sean Livingston out of the Portland game, Game 4. Playoff games total is 34. Games with Foster is 8. So the record without Foster, this is for the Warriors, 21-5. With Foster reffing, 4-4.
Are you putting it out there?
Point differential went from 9.5 in games without Foster to only 2 points.
Are you putting out the hot take?
You know,
is this the Brick House official hot take? The fix was in?
Bob isn't afraid to go there.
Are you doing it?
I think when the Thunder lost Game 6, they lost it themselves. Scott Foster just helps ensure that Warriors win, or at least so it doesn't make it a more controversial win in and of itself. Because if somehow the Warriors were to have lost that game because of a referee, then the NBA would never hear the end of it. So that would be my conspiracy, is that the NBA is always just trying to protect its brand.
Breaks my heart a little bit that the official Brick House take is an endorsement on momentum over the NBA fixing games.
On the next episode of Brick House.
It'll be mid-finals on the next episode of Brick House, in which we'll debate whether or not it's Golden State or Cleveland is the White Walkers, and which one is the good guys from the Game of Thrones.
Sweet, more Game of Thrones talk. I'll join right in on that.
Matt knows all about it. I know people like the Warriors, and, you know, they're like America's sweethearts, and you know, so you would think that they wouldn't be the White Walkers, but my hot take is they are the White Walkers. They're the zombies to come here to destroy mankind.
Watch out for your hands, Bob. That's a hot take.
Steaks are too hot.
Oh, man.
It is mildly humid in this room after that hot take.
Turn on that air conditioning.
Hot take.
Of course, I also can't wait to hear the shit-talking that comes out of Draymond's mouth about LeBron. But Anderson Varejão, that's why he's on the team, to give those deep, dark secrets.
Oh, we're going to get him. We're going to get those secrets.
Plus, little Kev seems like such an easy opportunity for Draymond Green to make fun of Kevin Love's manhood. Almost we'll talk about all that more. More NBA Finals. on the next episode of Brickhouse.